remember Sally Brown that we went to school with?
Yes, Ernie, I do.
Well, wasn't she a dumb Dora in school, especially in arithmetic?
Well, she might have been dumb at school, Ernie, but you should see her subtract now.
Subtract? What do you mean, subtract?
Well, she takes 10 from one and 20 from another one. Just a girl what knows her onions, Ernie.
The first comedy team on radio was the Happiness Boys, Billy Jones and Ernie Hare, a kind of early day Boone and Erickson. As a matter of fact, I think I heard that same joke last week on their program. Jones and Hare were CCO regulars by 1926, and some of our old-timers may even recall the opening line of their theme song.
We two boys without a care entertain you folks out there. That's our happiness. Just to know the things we do make us feel we're pleasing you. That's our happiness.
Each one beneath the sun should know that he's done his share while he's here.
Spreading all around him a little sunshine and cheer.
If we failed, at least we've tried. But if you feel satisfied, that's our happiness.
Much of our humor was homegrown. Certainly one of our most popular shows in the early 30s was Tina and Tim, the continuing saga of the Swedish maid Tina, the Irish handyman Tim, and their perpetually exasperated employer, Mrs. Hutchinson. Tina and Tim were created by a young Minneapolis actress, Peggy Beckmark, who has given us permission to air one of the earliest episodes in the series. Florence Murphy, a former well-known CCO personality, plays Mrs. Hutchinson in this skit.
Down upon the Swanson River, far, far away.
Presenting the great laugh sensation, Tina and Tim, transcribed for you by the makers of Maltomeal. Well, everything is serene and happy these days in the Hutchinson kitchen. Tina's quarrel with Tim and Inga has been patched up. Oscar the dog has been behaving himself, and Tina just doesn't seem to have any troubles at all. No doubt that accounts for the fact that as we look in on her today, she's singing.
No, 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 sweet Mr. Lee, at last her wife has found you. Ooh,
That's a little ditty.
Oh, dropping from the eaves again, bust you. How many times did I have to tell you to rap on the door?
I'm sorry, Tina, but I didn't want to interrupt the song you were singing there. What was it?
Oh, did you think it was pretty?
Sure, fine, fine. But I'm not sure I caught all the words.
Did you think my voice was better?
Well,
I met the singing teacher over to Inga's the other day, and she says the same thing about my voice as the other teacher did.
What was that?
She says if she was me, she would save it. Nothing funny about that, Tim. Tina, I guess I got unconnected on the phone. It was for you, too.
Oh, who was it?
It was that Mrs. Sherman.
Well, I'll call her back.
Yeah, you better do that. She wanted to talk with you.
Washington, 4538. Yes, please. Hello, Agnes? Oh, this is Carolyn Hutchinson. Hello? Hello, Agnes? There must be something the matter with that line.
Must be. I got done connecting, too. Why don't you try it again?
Well, I will. Operator, will you give me Washington 4583? Hello, Agnes? There must be something wrong with the line. Hello? Well, that's funny. I could swear she slammed up the receiver.
Well, Mrs. Hutchinson, if she did, there was nothing to swear about.
I wonder.
Ladies didn't do things like that.
What, Tina?
I says if she did, it was not...
Tina, just a minute, please.
Yeah?
It seems to me you were having quite a conversation with Mrs. Sherman when I came in.
Oh, yeah, we was talking.
And you were disconnected?
Yeah, we was.
You're sure she didn't hang up the receiver?
Oh, I didn't think so. I didn't see why she should.
I'm wondering. Just what were you talking about?
Well, I was asking her about her rheumatism.
Her rheumatism? Well, she hasn't got rheumatism.
Well, I know that now. She told me.
Well, what made you think she had rheumatism?
Well, it was just something Mr. Hutchinson says that made me think so.
Something Mr. Hutchinson said? What, Tina?
Well, just last night, he says Mrs. Sherman gave him a pain in the neck.
And you told her that?
Well, sure. I just wanted to find out if it was Ketson.
Why, Tina Torgerson.
Over the years, the lead roles were played by a number of CCO and Twin City personalities. The politicians, Frank McInerney and Fred Lundberg, were another popular twosome on the station in those years. The working girl's friend and the region's chief donut dunker was unquestionably good-humored Clellan Card. Clellan was born in Minneapolis, attended Blake, West High School, and Rutgers University, joining CCO in the early 30s. His Swedish dialect parody of Clement C. Moore's The Night Before Christmas was an annual treat on CCO until his death in 1963. But he's best remembered as a guy who always got up on the right side of the bed in the morning and made facing a new day not quite so foreboding.
Well, good morning, folks. Here's Card right from the corn crib. Whoever you are and wherever you are and whatever you're doing or wherever you're coming from or wherever you're going, just be careful. Of course, I don't have to tell you smart people this. At this time in the morning, everybody seems to be in a hurry to go somewhere or to get from where they've been. So just be doubly careful. Be on the defensive. We'll give you a complete almanac report during the show. Maybe we'll have a little music later on. But first, joke number one. Two fat old bags were sitting on the beach letting their lard fry in the sun, and one of them said,
"Say, did you ever cure your husband of staying out late at night?" "No, I'll say I did. One night I heard him sneaking in late, tiptoeing up the stairs like he always did. So I calls out to him and I says, 'Is that you, Charlie dear?' And boy, did that cure him, because his real name is Larry."
Joke number two. Oh, this is sort of in the form of a postcard. I got piles of mail. This one poured in today. It's from a listener from Squeaky Rocker, Iowa. And she writes as follows. "Dear Mr. Card, you're so good looking, such a snappy dresser, and always seem to have such impeccable manners." Boy, what smart people live down in Squeaky Rocker, eh? Well, she goes on to say, "Would you mind answering this question on etiquette?" And she said, "Should the bacon be eaten with the fingers?" Well, the answer is no, Mrs. Squeaky Rocker. The fingers should be eaten separately.
Clellan Card. And remember Captain Bob, skipper of the CCO showboat. Saturday mornings, he assumed a different guise as Uncle Bob. Another time, he was our own Bob. But always he was friendly, Bob DeHaven. At night, he used to come by as regularly as the Sandman from 1943 into the 60s, speaking in his native Minnesota tongue.
Well, good evening, everybody. Are you home tonight? Or are you over to Aunt Minnie's to see her quilting for the county fair? Are you holding your girl's hand? Well, if not, hold it. I have easy music such as Here Comes Heaven Again and Basin Street Blues by Fats Waller, and Somebody's Rockin' My Dreamboat. I won't tell you every tune, because I'm sneaky that way. Billy Butterfield and Margaret Whiting have indicated their opening tune will be There Goes That Song Again. If I fade and stop talking, you'll hear it clean through.
Friendly Bob retired from CCO in the late 60s with over 35 years in broadcasting. A graduate of the University of Wisconsin, Bob was and is a fine short story writer, author, stand-up MC. Yes, he and Hurricane Hat still live in the Twin Cities.
It's Flame Room Coffee Time. McGarvey's Flame Room Coffee and Cedric Adams bring you Stairway to Stardom.
The irrepressible Cedric Adams was CCO for 30 years, enjoying an acceptance unrivaled then or now. Cedric came to CCO in 1931, a young newspaper man attracted by the exciting new medium. His first air appearances were bit parts in CCO-produced dramatic programs, most of them extremely forgettable. In later years, Cedric recreated his very first assignment on CCO as narrator of the weekly series The Curtain's Part, for which he received the imposing sum of $3.50 a show.
A dingy room over Tai Wong's opium den, a room where malicious fate lies festering in her shroud, and moldy death's a trivial thing. A room where unknown horror lurks behind the walls, and human life seems less than the lean rat scurrying across the bare floor. A room where stands an iron...
Happily, it was not Cedric's last check from CCO. At his peak, he earned $200,000 a year. It was inevitable that Cedric would eventually concentrate on news. He'd been a newspaper reporter since his college days. He quickly became the most influential newscaster in the Northwest. Those oft-told stories of commercial airline pilots seeing home lights blink off at 10:15 each evening, the conclusion of Cedric's nighttime news, were apparently factual. His singular appeal was indefinable, and it's difficult to grasp listening to his tapes today. Maybe it was his unqualified zest for life, his willingness to be sentimental and to laugh. Maybe it was the fact that CCO was able to get the boy out of Magnolia, Minnesota, but never able to get Magnolia out of the boy. Cedric genuinely liked everybody, and his affection was returned in kind.
Sit down for an easy 10 minutes with me, will you, and share some random thoughts this evening. I wonder how many kids would recognize a button hook today if they saw one. A household item it was not too many years ago. Store teeth is certainly a misnomer. In what store in the world could you ever get fixed up with a pair of nippers, I wonder? I just thought of a good simile. Softer than a horse's nose. Grocery stores never seem to have stalks of bananas hanging in the windows anymore. I kind of miss those.
When Cedric Adams died on February 18th, 1961... CCO broadcast a portion of the memorial service from Plymouth Congregational Church. To those of us over 35, radio connotes more than the newest hit tunes or the latest news. Radio was once a vast and magic theater of sound, a kind of do-it-yourself TV. We collaborated with the writers and actors and sound effects men to color the backgrounds and fill in the faces with the agility of a dreamer. The villains looked as vile as we dared, the heroes as handsome as we liked. Alchemy operated on the airwaves, wrote Time magazine in a recent essay on old-time radio. Sound effects entered the ear, a world rose in the mind, full of actors and sets to rival the most elaborate constructions of Cecil B. DeMille. It's doubtful if anything since the soothsayer at the campfire so gripped the collective human consciousness. It was no accident that ancient radios were often shaped like cathedrals. Listeners gathered round them with a concentration bordering on worship. We thought it might be well, in this giant step backward tonight, to give you an opportunity to put your long-rusted faculty of imagination to work, as you did in bygone days. Daytime on CCO in the 30s and 40s was the domain of that most durable of institutions, the soap opera, affectionately named, of course, after the ever-present sponsors. Our gal Sunday asked the question, can this girl from a mining town in the West find happiness as the wife of a wealthy and titled Englishman? The answer, no. 5 afternoons a week on CCO. And there were scores of others, all devoted to the most reliable ingredient in theatrical history, domestic crisis. How many of these beleaguered heroines can you recall from those afternoons of yore?
The romance of Helen Trent. The real-life drama of Helen Trent, who, when life mocks her, breaks her hopes, dashes her against the rocks of despair, fights back bravely, successfully, to prove what so many women long to prove in their own lives, that because a woman is 35 or more, romance in life need not be over. That romance can begin at 35.
Romance at 35 and beyond. Now, quickly, who was the brave woman with the brilliant but unstable husband?
Thursday, October 2nd, 1941. Time for Valiant Lady.
Ruskin wrote this: whenever money is the principal object of life,
It is both got ill and spent ill, and does harm both in getting and spending. When getting and spending happiness is our aim, life can be beautiful. Life Can Be Beautiful is an inspiring message of faith drawn from life, written by Carl Bixby and Don Becker, and brought to you by Spick and Span. No soap, no other cleaner. Nothing in America cleans painted walls, woodwork, and linoleum like Spick and Span.
The Guiding Light. To you by the makers of P&G soap.
Rinso presents Big Sister. Yes, there's the clock in Glen Falls Town Hall telling us it's time for Rinso's story of Big Sister, brought to you by the new soapy rich Rinso. R-I-M-S. Oh,
that's R-I-N-S-O. By 1940, Big Sister and her radio counterparts numbered close to 80. Mercifully, not all on CCO. Certainly, it was the most faithful audience in the history of broadcasting. To many of our listeners, the characters were, in a very real sense, friends. They wrote with advice, sent anniversary gifts, holiday cards, birthday cakes. It was the sort of devotion radio or television personalities can only envy in these times. For one thing, the programs never came to a conclusion. They kept us adrift on a sea of soap flakes week after week after week.
This is The Right to Happiness, brought to you by CBS Radio. Now, to the many friends who wait for him, we present Just Plain Bill, Barber of Hartville. The story of a man who might be living right next door to you. The real-life story of people just like people we all know.
Let's see now. Wasn't the second Mrs. Burton daughter-in-law of the first Mrs. Burton? Or was it the other way around?
CBS Radio brings you The Second Mrs. Burton, featuring Terry King. The Road of Life, brought to you transcribed by Ivory Soap.
And, of course, America's mother of the airwaves, Oxydol's own.
And now, CBS Radio brings you Ma Perkins.
Few serials reached the ripe old age of Ma Perkins, which first appeared on CCO on December 4th, 1933. And few soaper fans will forget broadcast number 7,065. It was unquestionably a three-handkerchief afternoon.
And now, here's Ma again.
Thank you, Dan. This is our broadcast number 7,065. I first came here on December 4th, 1933. Thank you for all being so loyal to us these 27 years. The part of Willie has been played right from the beginning by Murray Forbes. Shuffle was played for 25 years by Charles Eggleston, and for the last 2 years by Edwin Wolfe, who was also our director. The Fay you have been hearing these past few years has been Margaret Draper, and the part was played for many years by Rita Ascott. For 15 years, our Evie has been Kay Campbell. Helen Lewis plays Gladys, And Tom Wells has been played by both John Larkin and Casey Allen. Our announcer is Dan Donaldson. Our writer for more than 20 years has been Orin Tavroff. Ma Perkins has always been played by me, Virginia Payne. If you care to write to me, Ma Perkins, I'll try to answer you. Goodbye, and may God bless you.
Afternoons were never quite the same after Ma closed the lumber yard for the last time. When you've lived as long as I have, said Dr. Christian, you'll find justice always gets the breaks. Wrongdoing never pays off in the end. At least it didn't in old-time radio. Ah, those enjoyable evenings, being scared half out of our wits. Once pictures came along, the mysteries were never quite as gripping somehow.
Good evening, friends of the inner sanctum. This is your host to welcome you in through the squeaking door to another half hour of horror. Come in, won't you? Sit down. I hope you'll forgive me if I don't get up, but I'm terribly tired. I spent last night with a friend who's a book collector, specializes in bestsellers. He certainly showed me some interesting ones. In fact, he tried to bury me in one. Because all the very best sellers have corpses in them.
Evil had no chance against such greats as the FBI in Peace and War. Gangbusters calling all Americans to the war on the underworld. Mr. District Attorney, Champion of the People, Johnny Dollar, the Whistler.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, it's the first in a new series of strange tales by The Whistler. Long the West's most popular mystery and a CBS favorite of last summer, The Whistler now brings his unusual stories of conflict and emotion to coast audiences each Wednesday evening at this same time. Tonight, The Whistler's story, A Woman's Privilege.
And now, Mr. Keene, the famous investigator, and his partner Mike Clancy are looking into the murder. The scene of the crime is a home owned by two weird sisters, Martha and Amy Carson. And the murdered man is their niece's young husband. Why has he been murdered? Mr. Keene is first attempting to find the source of the frightful shrieking which has been heard in the house. But he and Mike are being blocked by Martha Carson and Luther Prague, her burly handyman, who has entered the room with an axe in his hand. As Mr. Keene says,
Martha Carson, I'm here with my partner, Mike Clancy, to investigate the murder of young Donald Travers. I suggest you tell your handyman to let us go upstairs. If you try to prevent us, you'll only put yourself further under suspicion for the murder that occurred in this house last night.
And now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I know, according to all natural laws, it's impossible. Completely, utterly impossible. But I tell you, and I swear to it, that I and I alone am guilty of this murder. As guilty as though I'd killed him with my own two hands.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke.
Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. And the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
Oh, no. What evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows.
The shadow, Lamont Cranston, a man of wealth, a student of science, and a master of other people's minds, devotes his life to righting wrongs, protecting the innocent, and punishing the guilty. Cranston is known to the underworld as the Shadow. Never seen, only heard, his true identity is known only to his constant friend and aide, Margot Lane.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit, spoke the Shadow, and how we used to like to imitate him. The Shadow was the essence of radio drama, invisible to criminals, but not to our imaginations. No film or television shadow could hold us as he did.
I put the car away, Turk. You want me any more tonight?
Hey? Oh, no. No, you can go.
Okay, Turk. See you later.
What was that?
You're Turk Tully, I believe.
Who said that? Who's talking to
me? No, don't be alarmed.
Well, where are you? Who are you?
Men call me the Shadow.
The Shadow?
You've heard of me, then?
Yeah. Yes, we've heard of him, but not for ages. And that's a pity. Copies of old programs are hard to find, as you may know, because wire and then tape recorders didn't come into general use until after World War II. About the only recordings of the earlier dramas were 16-inch discs made by networks and syndicators. Many were discarded long ago, or remain locked up to guard against possible lawsuits over residual rights. Nonetheless, original network transcriptions do show up occasionally in old radio shops or in the estates of one-time radio stars. When it happens, the discs are put on tape and the programs traded around the country by collectors and clubs, a fast-growing nationwide cult.
Theater time. Broadway is buzzing with excitement and eagerly waiting to welcome an opening night performance at the Little Theater off Times Square. There'll be a crowd of onlookers and autograph fans on hand at the entrance to greet the celebrities who always attend a premiere on the Great White Way. So let's not miss a minute of the excitement. It's just a short walk around the corner. Will you join me? There are lots of uniforms in the crowd tonight at Broadway and 42nd Street. Shall we cross the street here? Well, here we are at the Little Theater off Times Square.
Have your tickets ready, please. Have your tickets ready, please.
Good evening, Mr. First Nighter. The usher will show you to your box.
Thank you. We'll go right in.